Now we have your time to participate in this program. So I'll call on one side and then the other side, and you could direct to which brother you'd like to ask a question. So you could feel free to ask a question on any point that the panel mentioned. Who'd like to be first to ask a question to the panel? Sister Joy, thank you.
They don't have a mic yet.
Could you take one of the mics, please? Yeah, it's coming. It's coming, Sister Joy. Thank you.
I have a question for each one of you, and each one of them is on a kindergarten level, because that's where my mind is on this subject. But I'll start with the first one. Now, that's Richard, I believe.
Yeah.
I was surprised, and maybe I read it wrong, that we always think about Persia as being the big element, and Iran was possibly a little town. I read that Iran was the big government, and Persia was just a part of it. So that's one thing. And then, going along with that historical thinking, I always thought, like Mark Twain wrote about going over to Israel and different ones of the 20th century, 19th century, that the Bedouin Arabs were not interested in advancement. But here we're talking about those people being very advanced, the way I would associate it with like the wise men of Persia. So those are my two questions, if you figured anything out of what I asked.
Okay, Brother Richard?
Well, Sister Joy asked some very good questions. We're referencing what's called the Golden Age of Islam, which was when they had, 1,000 years ago, the leading world economy. Number two was China. And they had the leading scientists. They had remeasured the earth accurately several times and developed new methods for measuring it. But your question was, how do we link Iran and Persia? I think we've all heard the term Aryan. And that term Aryan is directly linked to the name Iran. So, in fact, all of us who are of European descent are expatriate Persians. Okay? The furthest enclave was Ireland, which is Erie. Okay? Linked back to this word Aryan. These are the children of Japheth. And as Brother George pointed out very critically and importantly, when you look at those enemies early on, they are Semitic. Now, there's two on the list I have to disagree are not Semitic. The two are Philistines, which are a sea people from Hamitic descent, and the Tyrus, which is actually Tyre is of Japhethic descent. But the immediate neighbors around them are overwhelmingly Semitic, and they are the enemies at the beginning, and those near neighbors are not the enemies at the end. The Bedouin Arabs are not part of the Iranians, okay? They are not at all Iranians. Actually, though, the Arabs themselves in Iraq, which had a very advanced economy, set up what was called the House of Wisdom in the 800s. We have just been able to finish up the third volume of scripture studies reading on Read the Volumes. Let me put in a plug for that. And you had Al-Mamun's forced entrance to the Great Pyramid. Al-Mamun was an Arab in Iraq. He was an Iraqi who set up this university system that was successful for many, many centuries. And as a consequence, we have five times as much Greek learning that only survives in Arabic as compared to what survives in Greek, because they conserved all the knowledge that the Christian mobs burned in the Library of Alexandria. So they were great conservators and innovators, and naturally, you know, we don't want to, you know, we don't have time to go into all of that, but point is, they are highly capable of reproducing 60-year-old technology for, or over 60-year-old technology for nuclear weapons. There's no question they can do it. They've got the brains, they've got the resources, they absolutely have the will.
Thank you. Sister Joy, you have another question? No, I thought...
I have 11 questions.
11 questions. Okay, we'll come right back to you. We'll see if anyone else... Okay, Sister Alice, we'll come back to you.
Where is Syria and Egypt in Psalm 83 or Ezekiel 38?
And who are you directing that to? Anyone? Okay. Anyone like to respond to that?
Egypt is where Amalek on the lower left was. And... I am not sure now whether Syria is specifically mentioned. I don't believe so. It says, it's got, the going all the way around is the enemies of Psalm 83 are the tabernacles of Edom, the Ishmaelites, Moab, Hagarians, Gebel, Ammon, Amalek, the Philistines, Asher, they have come to help the children of Lot. So Assyria is not or mentions specifically in Psalm 83.
Okay. Yes, Brother Dan?
I need a mic.
Oh, yes. Okay. Pass the mic, though.
I think Sister Alice's question was also in Ezekiel 38. I think what Brother George is mentioning, and I would agree with that, the war or the Psalms 83 is not part of the Gog and Magog invasion. I think that they are two separate wars, and I think you know I would agree with Brother George that the Psalms 83 comes first, and the Gog and Magog. And if you read in Ezekiel 38, in verse, when it talks about Gog and Magog, and it says that they, where is it? I had it here, and I lost it. But anyway, they come from the north. And one of the things, if you look towards due north of Turkey and you keep going up, you end up in southern Russia.
Right.
And all of southern Russia are Muslim, you know, countries. They are not Christian countries. And that's one of the reasons why I personally believe that and it's a different set of Arabs or different set of Muslims that come down. It's not the same. They're not the same ones that are in Psalms 83. Psalms 83 are defeated, and that's the ones that are right around the nation of Israel. But these come down from the north, and that's why you know I believe that they're coming down to take a spoil. And as I said before, I believe that possibly the city of Jerusalem might be the spoil that they're coming down to take.
Thank you, Brother Dan. Okay, Brother Peter and Brother Richard.
Yeah, just quickly in Psalms 83, Edom is Moab and Ammon, which is modern-day Jordan. Amalek is the northern Negev, and that's really that area is occupied by Egypt, so there may be an indirect reference to Egypt there. The Philistines are the Palestinians on the Gaza Strip. Tyre and Gebel is Lebanon and possibly includes Syria. Here's these are my notes. Since they have been the dominant and controlling influence in Lebanon for many years, Asher, Syria, or Iraq, the Ishmaelites and Hagarines, their identification is uncertain, but other Arab nations, so it could include some of the ones we're uncertain about. The Ishmaelites were nomads. They traveled and intermarried all over the Arab world. So Egypt, Syria, and Saudi Arabia are not clearly and directly mentioned. Egypt is Hamitic and may have been excluded. They're Hamitic and may have been excluded from the list because of that. But Syria and Saudi Arabia may be included in the difficult to identify Ishmaelites, Hagarines, and Amalek.
Thank you. Brother Richard?
When we look at Egypt, the Arabic name, the ancient name is Mizraim. And when you deal with that group of people, they survive today as a persecuted Christian minority called the Copts. And they've been in the news a few times lately, especially with this, you know, blatantly inflammatory movie that has been out. But let's not get into that. Most of Egypt are actually Arabs who have migrated and taken over and live there. But the traditional population is still there at about 15% of the current population, the Fellahin, the ones of Hamitic descent. So I think that's why they're not mentioned. But having said that, the Iranian bomb, because it's not, you know, it's going to happen. The Iranian bomb, the buzz in the intelligence community is that for the first time, you see the Saudis talking to Israel because neither one of them wants an Iranian bomb. And there's the split that's been alluded to between the Sunni and Shia. Iran is a Shiite Muslim country. All the rest of the enemies are Sunni Muslim countries. They really don't like each other. And none of them want to see Iran with a bomb. But Iran's got the bomb now.
Thank you. I'd also like to mention, I did read articles saying that the Arabs are supplying Israel with money to stop Iran. So it's a very interesting point that you're bringing out, that the most of the Arabs do not want Iran to have a bomb. Anyone else? Yes, Brother Joe on the right side. We'll go from side to side.
My question is directed at all the panel members, and and it's taking in the future state of Israel, which was part of the mandate of the panel, and we've heard primarily about the present and the historical and state of Israel, and I understand that the future state might be somewhat speculative in some areas, and so I'm, you know, maybe asking you to reach a little bit on this. But I'm asking anyone who's willing to offer an answer, maybe a little interpretive vision on how they foresee the state of Israel, the earthly situation yet to come after the prophetic elements are pretty much complete, and the wars have been fought and so forth, and the government yet to come is in place. And I'm wondering for a little vision on this to help us foresee into the future, if anyone has the proper eyeglass to see this. I'm wondering about the administrative, how the kingdom will be administered, the shape of the government, so to speak, on how certain things will be accomplished Some things that came into my mind was, for example, how do we transition from an economy that we have right now based upon money into something that is not based on money? Does that just happen overnight? What about the infrastructure in the world scene now? All of your buildings and pipelines and electricity transmission and so forth. How does that get transitioned into the kingdom? And what about all the ecological damage that's been done in the world and things? I'm just wondering for thoughts on any of these things that might give us a little vision beyond what we've heard. Maybe some things can be applied, especially regards to natural resources. And if you do offer an answer, could you also specify what time frame you're talking about, whether you're talking about the mediatorial phase or in the ages to come?
Okay. If anyone wants to start, Jack, could we call on you first? Do you have any thoughts on how the economy is going to be transferred over, and how would the ancient worthies tie into this then? How will they take over the government and so forth? Then we can talk. I ask Brother Joe. Do you have any thoughts on that, Jack?
Very limited.
Well, whatever thoughts you have.
Yeah, well, I think it does depend on the time. You know, we could say that 100 years isn't a long time at all for some kind of a transition period to take place. And obviously, mankind has to eat and they have to drink. They have to have food and shelter and clothing. So those things are going to continue on. Now, in what capacity are they going to be received in the initial stages of setting up the, or, you know, after the wars and so forth? And when the ancient worthies are on the scene, that's truly speculation. And I can just tell you that it will be a fair operating system, but I don't have any thoughts other than that.
Okay, all right. Brother Joe and then Brother Russ.
As Brother Joe said in his question, we really do sort of have to speculate a little bit here and use our imaginations. And I'll recommend to Joe that you read the Five Alive Again books that Brother Gene Burns wrote, because he actually goes into a lot of this in some detail as to what his imagination pictured the transition and the kingdom being like. But just to touch on a few of the specifics that you asked us to touch on, as far as the transition is concerned and how the government in Israel will become the government of the world, well, first of all, as has been mentioned, the ancient worthies will be delivering Israel out of a time of great distress. So I think the nearest term thing we look for is this time of great distress upon the nation of Israel. She's in great trouble militarily, politically, socially. So she turns to God. God raises the ancient worthies. They obviously manifest their superior abilities so that all the world can see this. I mean, they're on the 6 o'clock news. CNN is doing 24/7 coverage of these people that are turning things around in Israel, delivering them out of this trouble that all of the world is also watching on CNN. So I think that near term is how the transition goes from now to the kingdom initially being set up. After that, in the peaceable kingdom of righteousness, and again, that's long-term, but I can't define long-term how many years in the future that is. As the panel has touched on, Israel has always been in the forefront of technological advancements. One of the speculations or the imaginations that Brother Gene Burns included in his Alive Again books was that in the kingdom, the energy potential of antimatter would be harnessed to power homes and factories and everything cleanly and effectively and efficiently. And so maybe some technological breakthrough along that line or something else is the way that the mechanics of the kingdom and the restoration of the earth to its Edenic-like conditions will be brought about. And then the last piece of it that he also included, which I like, is that the food supply in the kingdom will be much purer and better than it is now, that there will be breakthroughs in farming, plant life, harvesting. I think he even speculates that some seeds that existed in the Garden of Eden were miraculously preserved and now are still hidden somewhere on the earth and will be brought out in the kingdom to help mankind grow what they need to eat to
regain that perfection of their natural being. Then the last piece, I think you mentioned something like, what about pollution? And let's say there is some nuclear war that breaks out on a limited scale that pollutes a large section of the country or the world. And I remember hearing on the news not too long ago that in Florida, they have actually found some plants in the swamps that can filter out all of the pollution, even the heavy metals, the residues of nuclear waste, and so on. And so I think there are many secret hidden things in nature today that mankind will discover by God's revelation and harness to bring about what we imagine as being that perfect kingdom of peace.
Thank you. Brother Russ?
I'll just add a little bit to what Brother Joe said, and I agree with it entirely. I think there'll be a couple overriding principles here. The recognition of the ancient worthies, the recognition of the new order that's going on will be paramount in all the peoples of the world. And the sooner and more quickly they come into alignment with that, the greater will be blessings flow to them and their immediate community, let's say, because we know the nations are going to disappear. And so that'll become the driving principle that brings mankind up gets them on the path of walking up the highway of holiness. It will be the recognition that if we go along with this new arrangement, problems disappear and blessings come. I'm sure that will be that. And just one more item that I thought was part of your question. We spent some time talking with Brother Ed about this, Brother Ed Grabner, last week when we entertained him, was how will the ancient worthies be recognized as the authoritarian figures? And Brother Joe had a good point that they'll be covered over the media, but I think one of the things they'll be able to bring to the world is pointing to areas of Israel to say, this is what happened here, dig here, or inspect this area here. This is when we were here, this is what happened here. And those artifacts that have not been discovered, that will be discovered, and exactly where the ancient worthies will tell them, will identify them as people, the only people that could have known, that could be alive at that time, that could have known where those things happened. And obviously once the resurrection begins, that process won't be necessary anymore, but the point where the ancient worthies return and need to be authenticated, that they really are Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Moses, etc., they will have knowledge that only they could possess, and that will authenticate them to the world.
Okay, thank you. George is next. Brother George?
Yeah, in regards to the transition, Brother Russell, in three different places, three different reprint articles, brings out a sequence more or less like this. Of course, the first thing that has to happen is everyone who has received the benefit of the merit for justification must go into death. After everyone has, that is the church, great company, second death class, and all go beyond, then the blood will be applied on behalf of Adam. And then the next step will be the inauguration of the new covenant. But what's a little bit unique in these three articles is Brother Russell says that the new covenant will then be made with the mediator acting on behalf of Israel. And the reason why he brings that out in these three things is that the new covenant must be in effect before the ancient worthies can be raised, that they have to be under the new covenant. And so from that standpoint, Our Lord as mediator acts on Israel's behalf and saying, in essence, Father, I guarantee that all who will become Israel, Israel will obey these, will come under the terms of this covenant, and all of mankind who will become Israelites indeed will become under this covenant, and those that refuse, I will remove. So I like that aspect that the covenant is made. And therefore, the ancient worthies, when they're raised, they're immediately under the new covenant arrangement. And, of course, they will put forth the knowledge of God's plans and purposes. And then all the holy remnant of Israel as they make their consecration will be under the terms of it, and whoever will of rest of Israel, of all mankind who will make a consecration, will come under the terms of this covenant that will already have been made in effect after the blood is first applied.
Okay. Brother Tom, and then I'm going to add a few thoughts of my own. Brother Tom.
Jesus. Well, when Joe was asking about that interim period between Armageddon and the setting up of the kingdom, I thought about Joseph and how he prepared for the 7 years of plenty. He accumulated food and everything for the 7 years of famine. And I think when we think of Armageddon, we think of mass worldwide destruction. But I think it will be much more strategic than that, that there's no reason to destroy every farm implement. And so I think farming will still be possible during Armageddon, and that will prepare food enough for mankind in that interim period where things aren't quite organized. And also we know that the United States government has vast resources of oil and food stored up just for certain emergencies. And I don't think we're the only country that does that. So it could be that those are the stores that the Lord will preserve in order to get mankind through this interim period. I like the analogy with Joseph in preparation for that, though.
Okay. Thank you, Brother Tom. I'd like to add a few thoughts here. In 2 Chronicles, the 20th chapter, Jehoshaphat is king, and he's surrounded by all of the nations around him. And I think what George was talking about, that I believe this is my own thought, that the ancient worthies will be on the scene before the final attack on Israel. And in 2 Chronicles, the 20th chapter, Jehoshaphat prays to the Lord and says, "Our eyes are fixed on you, and we claim the promise that you promised this land to us." And God said, "This will be my battle," and Israel did not have to fight. They were delivered. And in Zechariah 12:10, it says, "The nation of Israel will recognize Jesus, whom they have pierced." So the ancient worthies will get recognition that they are the leaders of Israel. And as was brought out, they'll go on television and say that I'm Abraham or Moses. And they'll be able to prove that they are actually Abraham and Moses, and the ancient worthies will take over the government, and it'll start to prosper. And as we all the things that were brought out by the panel and what Brother Russ was bringing about, all the inventions that are yet to come, Israel will be the leading nation, and they'll be the most prosperous nation. And whoever comes under that particular arrangement, in Zechariah, it says that the Lord will prosper all of the people who come to Israel, and then it will be fulfilled that 10 people will try to get the skirt or the hand of the Jew because they'll recognize that God is with them. Any short comment by any of the panel members, and then we'll have to close. Any comment from anyone? Yes, Brother Dan.
You know, one of the things, if you stop to think about, when you go back to our Lord Jesus, when he was on the scene, he was perfect, and he stood out. And it says, "No, never spake a man like this man did." I mean, you know, this stood him out. When you think about the ancient worthies being resurrected, they're also going to be resurrected perfect human beings, and from that aspect, they will have the intellect and the knowledge to convince the nation of Israel at that point in time, and be able to gainsay any of the the gainsayers that are against them. And also, when you continue reading in Zechariah the 14th chapter, after the miraculous Gog and Magog invasion, it says that if anybody doesn't come up,
yes, right.
If anybody doesn't come up, there will be no rain. Then it says there will be plagues that will come upon them, you know, those that do not come up. And so, you know, God is
going to be, you know, not, if you want to call it, not recognizable. These are things that man has no control over. Man doesn't have any control over the weather, but God does.
Yes. And it also mentions in Ezekiel 38 that when Israel will be delivered, God will be sanctified among all the nations. So evidently this will be a worldwide knowledgeable fact that Israel has been delivered and that God is with Israel. And I'm amazed that the scriptures bring out the point that the first thing that the world will recognize is that Israel was being punished for that double period of disfavor. And when they recognize that God is with Israel, they'll recognize that their favor, the time of disfavor is over. So that would be the setting up of the kingdom. What we're going to do is let's all rise, and we're going to sing the doxology. And then we'll ask Brother Russ Martin to lead us in prayer. And before everyone goes into the lunchroom, the deacons want a little bit of time to take these tables, and they have to be set up in the lunchroom. So just pause for a little while for the deacons to take these tables into the lunchroom. And I'd like to thank the panel for their participation, and I'd like to admonish everyone to watch anything on the computer, in the newspaper, on the TV about Israel, because the prophecies have to be fulfilled through Israel.